Time for Michigan's newest sports talk show, Mitt Madness.
And here he goes. Defense win championship.
Michigan sports talk from here in Battle Creek. The latest stories, the biggest games, all across the Mitten State.
That's not something to play with.
Streaming live and on demand on the 95.3 WBCK app. Your host, Dajon Hughes.
Good morning on this Saturday morning. Welcome back into Mid Madness. I'm your host, Dajon Hughes. Getting ready to jump into an hour's worth of what is happening around the state of Michigan when it comes to sports. There's tons to get into as basketball season is still alive and well in the Mid, and as the Pistons are still rolling through the NBA playoffs. The Diamond is starting to exist because it ain't really heating up or cooling down. It's kind of just there. We'll touch in with the Tigers and what's happening inside of Comerica Park, and then we'll get back into some more basketball action, talking WNBA and college basketball as some changes are coming, some positive, maybe some negative, depending on who you're a fan of and how you view the whole basketball scene at the moment. And then we'll get into our picks as always. Hopefully you guys had a fantastic week. I had an interesting week, a whole lot going on, and excited to get into the weekend and watch a ton, and I mean a ton, of lacrosse. Professional season for outdoors kicking off this weekend, and normally I would be at opening weekend, but it's normally a lot closer in somewhere in New York, and most of the time Albany, but this year it's all the way over in Salt Lake City, Utah, and I'm just going to take a pass. So I'm here, but I'll be watching on TV. We still have indoor playoffs going off, and it's first round of the NCAA tournament as well. So I have tons, almost too much lacrosse to watch this weekend. So I'll be enjoying all of that. But yeah, with that being said, it's time to dive into the weekend that is coming up. After recapping what happened, we have a ton to talk about when we talk about our Pistons. Looking at the playoffs overall, the last time we spoke, we were getting ready for some game sixes and game sevens, and a whole lot has happened since then. I just want to let you know, I was correct in the Lakers taking down the Rockets 98-78 in that game six, so they got to move on, and they were going to that matchup against the Thunder. And then the Timberwolves took care of business in six as well, taking down the Nuggets 110-98 to move on to the second round, where they're taking on the Spurs. And then over on the east side of things, we had three game sevens on the Eastern Conference side. We'll start with the first one that we knew about, which was the 76ers and the Celtics. I ended up picking this game last week, which you can find out later on if I was correct or not. Well, I'm kidding. The 76ers won, and I was not correct. So the Celtics are booted out of the playoffs earlier than a lot of people thought they would be. 76ers move on for a matchup against the Knicks, who had took care of the Hawks in six. They were the only team in the East to get their series done in six games instead of seven. And then the Cavaliers and the Raptors. Raptors forcing a game seven back in Cleveland. Cleveland took care of business in game seven, 114-102 on last Sunday to take care of that playoff series and move on for a matchup against, well, what was the winner of the Pistons and Magic, which you know we're not just going to tell you who won there. We got to go back and look at what happened. We knew coming into the weekend, if I'm not mistaken, just going to check the date here on this. Which was, if they're going to give it to me here, the 29th, which we spoke after the 29th. So we knew about game five. The Pistons were down 3-2 headed into the weekend. So what happened in game six? In game seven, you might ask, well, a whole lot happened for the Pistons in game six and game seven. Starting with game six, the Pistons were able to grab a dub and even things up 3-3. They won 93-79. Cade Cunningham continuing to be an all-star through the playoffs. 32 points on 10 of 23 shooting, 10 of 12 from the free throw line. He grabbed 10 boards in this game as well. Asar Thompson had 6 assists, no turnovers in his 37 minutes of play. Pistons shoot 40, 33, 77 in the splits. 11 turnovers, 52 rebounds, led for 27% of the game, their largest lead being 14. Meanwhile, many people probably thought the Magic were going to pack things up, seal it up, and send the Pistons home early as one of, I believe, 8 NBA teams of all time to be a 1 seed to lose to an 8 seed in the first round of the playoffs. But they were led by Paolo Banchero, 17 points, 4 of 20 from the field, 9 of 12 from the free throw line, 10 rebounds. Jalen Suggs had 7 assists, 5 turnovers. But without Franz Wagner, it was a very hard game for the Magic to continue to play at a high offensive rate. I mean, they shot 35, 25, 76 for their splits, 11 turnovers, 38 rebounds. They did lead for 69% of the game. Their largest lead was 24, but they weren't leading at the right part of the game for the Magic, and that would be at the end where early in the fourth quarter, Pistons tied things up with 7:36 to go at 72, and they never really looked back from there. The Pistons were able to grab hold of that and force Game 7 back in Detroit at Little Caesars Arena, where there was an absolute showdown of a battle for this Game 7, probably one of the best basketball games we have seen all year long in the NBA. Paolo Banchero, 38 points, 14 of 25 from the field, 6 of 8 from the free throw line. Also had 9 rebounds and 6 assists in this game with 5 turnovers in 42 minutes. 42 minutes. 41% from the field, 33% from the three-point line, 73% from the free throw line for the Magic. 16 turnovers, 33 rebounds, led for 16% of the game, their largest lead being 4. Meanwhile, on the other side, Pistons continuing to get high-level play from Cade Icewood-Cunningham. 32 points, 10 of 18 from the field, 8 of 10 from the free throw line. Jalen Duren got 15 boards. Cunningham poured in another 12 assists, 4 turnovers in 39 minutes of play. 51% from the field, 48% from behind the arc, 82% from the charity stripe, 14 turnovers, 41 rebounds. Pistons led for 76% of this game, their largest lead being 25. So they win Game 7 at home in Little Caesars Arena, setting them up for that matchup with the one team that maybe I was most concerned about them playing in the playoffs, was the Cleveland Cavaliers, who looked very good in the regular season. Also was a team that was able to put some pressure on the Pistons during the regular season. In fact, the Pistons split the regular season series with the Cavs 2-2. Where the Cavs won game 1, 116-95. Pistons win games 2 and 3, 114-110, 122-119, respectively. And then the Cavs won game 4, 113-109. So it's, you know, nowhere near even for either one of these games. But maybe it is, because the Pistons are looking good right now. Maybe they finally flipped that switch at the end of that Magic series and are able to find themselves playing at a, you know, their highest caliber. Because following Game 7, a couple nights later, they had Game 1 at Little Caesars Arena with the Cleveland Cavaliers to start the East semis. And, well, the Pistons came out victorious. 111-101. Cade Cunningham, 23 points, 7 assists, 4 turnovers in 42 minutes. 6 of 19 from the field, 9 of 11 from the free throw line. Jalen Duren grabbed 12 boards. 44% from the field, 38% from the three-point line, 77 from the free throw line. Only 12 turnovers, grabbed 45 boards, led for 91% of the game, largest lead being 18. Meanwhile, for the Cavs, Donovan Mitchell, 23 points, 9 of 19 from the field, 1 of 2 from the free throw line. Evan Mobley had 9 rebounds. James Harden had 7 assists, but followed that up with 7 turnovers in 35 minutes. 45, 37, 94 in their splits. 20 turnovers, 41 rebounds, led for 6% of the game, largest lead being just 5. So they picked up right where they left off. I mean, Tobias Harris has been great. I mean, this was his 6th game in a row pouring in 20 points in the playoffs. So he's been phenomenal in helping Cade Cunningham and being a second star and having that offensive input that is needed if you're going to move on inside of the NBA playoffs. So they kept that momentum rolling into the next series. And, well, game two happened not too long ago. And, you know, that was Thursday night. Pistons came out victorious again, another 10-point victory, 107-97. Cade Cunningham, 25 points, 10 rebounds, 5 turnovers in 42 minutes, 7 of 14 from the field, 8 of 8 from the free throw line. Jalen Duren grabbed 10 boards. You got 49, 50, 75 in splits, 13 turnovers, 42 rebounds, led for 94% of the game, largest lead being 14. Pistons absolutely, I mean, essentially dominated in this game. Donovan Mitchell pours in again, 31 points, 11 of 24 from the field, 7 of 9 from the free throw line. Dennis Schroeder had 5 assists, 2 turnovers in 20 minutes, and Jared Allen grabbed 7 rebounds. Their splits were 42, 22, 81, 11 turnovers, 36 rebounds, led for 1% of the game by just 3. So, I mean, when you got a guy like Cade Cunningham coming in hitting dagger threes, Tobias Harris is giving you 21 points off the bench, you get 12 points from Duncan Robinson as well, like, you're playing at a phenomenal rate. Asar Thompson, even though he was in foul trouble, is arguably one of the best defenders in the country right now and played at an unbelievable rate last night and was able to be great and help Duren down low. So you have all the factors, and a lot of people are pointing toward this team being compromised very similarly to every other championship iteration of the Pistons. They all have big bruising, big guys that'll put a back to you or will make it hard for you to score. They have athletic wings who are able to make a lot of different things happen at once, and a point guard who can get you a bucket at any time with a couple different shooters. This team is poised to make a run and be great if they're able to continue to play at this level. Now, the next game on the docket, which I'm not going to talk a ton about because I'll be getting into it in the picks later on in the show, is later today, 3 p.m. on NBC and Peacock. There's a great chance that, you know, the Pistons go down and win the game inside Rocket Arena in Cleveland, Ohio, and take a 3-1 or a 3-0 lead, which, I mean, at that point is basically giving the Pistons a ticket to the Eastern Conference Finals. I mean, obviously, they still have to finish the mission and win one more game, but if they leave Cleveland with one win and they got to go back home and only need one, I don't see an area or a timeline where the Pistons lose that game. I think it's done in 5 if they're able to win one on the road. Maybe it's done in 6 if they don't, but or maybe it's done in 6 even if they do. But I would lean toward saying that this series is going to be done in 5. But the Pistons are in great shape. Kevin Huerter's still a game-time decision with that thigh injury. Sam Merrill, a game-time decision with a hamstring injury for the Cavaliers. Cavs have lost 3 of their last 5. They grabbed a couple wins. The most important one was that game 7 against the Raptors. But other than that, the Pistons on a roll, 5 in a row, and they don't look to be slowing down anytime soon. So they're in great shape moving forward. I think the Pistons have finally found their groove, and I'm looking forward to what's going to be happening next. Like I said, they do have their eyes on the Knicks, so that's who they want to see in the next round. The Thunder are dominating the Lakers right now, 2-0. The most exciting series right now outside of the Pistons is the Timberwolves and Spurs, which is tied at 1-1, and that's going to continue to be an exciting series. When we come back from the break, we'll be diving into the Tigers and what's happening over in Comerica Park here on Mid Madness on 95.3. Welcome back into Mid Madness. I'm your host, Dejon Hughes. We just got done talking about the Pistons, and now it's time for us to do a hop, skip, jump, and a glide on over as we slide into home base at Comerica Park to talk about our Detroit Tigers. We'll start where we always start when we talk about our teams, in the standings. The Tigers have fallen to second place in the Central Division. The Cleveland Guardians sit atop 20-19. Tigers are a game and a half back, 18-20. White Sox 17-22, games back. 17-21, 2.5 games back are the Royals, and the Twins are 16-22, 3.5 games back. When we look at the American League overall, the Tigers are sitting in sixth place. Yankees are atop at 26-12. Rays are a half game behind at 25-12. The A's 6.5 games back along with the Guardians. The A's are 19-18. The Mariners are 18-20, so tied with the Tigers. So Tigers technically sitting in fifth place at 8 games back from the Yankees. Overall, the Tigers still sitting in that middle, about 10 to 12-ish, 15-ish range, 8 games back from the Yankees, who also lead the entire MLB. So, I mean, they're not in a bad spot, but not sitting atop the division anymore could be a concern, but it is early in the season. Only 38 games in out of 162, so plenty of time for the Tigers to catch up. Looking at the team leaders now, Kevin McGonigal still putting the barrel on the ball, batting at a 2.99, his on-base percentage at .392, slugging percentage .453. Kerry Carpenter leads the squad with jacks. He's got 6 home runs. He's got 17 RBIs, batting at a .210. Dylan Dingler, he's the RBI king right now. 26 of them, 6 home runs, .248 on his average. On the pitching side, the man on the mound is the man on the mound, and we all know who that is. Tarek Skubal owns the MLB right now when it comes to being on the mound. 2-time AL Cy Young winner of the year. So you know he's going to continue to star and be the ace of this Tigers bullpen. He's got an ERA of 2.70. He's got three wins and 45 strikeouts. It's Brant Herder who's leading the team in wins with 4. His ERA sits at 1.45, and he's got 13 strikeouts. So, I mean, this team is in great position on the pitching side of things. When you look at batting, teams tied for 14th with 165 runs, tied for 11th with their 2.44 batting average, 12th with .326 for their on-base percentage, and 11th as well for the .393 slugging percentage. On the pitching side, ERA 3.88 is good at 10th, tied for 5th with 16 quality starts. The whip at 1.32 is good for 17th. The opponent batting average of .241 is 16th in the league. Taking a look at what we last talked about in between now and then, they had just wrapped up the Atlanta series where they lost 2-1, and then they went down to play Texas came up to Comerica, the Rangers taking on the Tigers. Tigers lose game 1 5-4. Alexander picks up the win for the Rangers. Montero and Herder each pick up wins for the Tigers, 5-1, 7-1 in back-to-back games on Saturday and Sunday. So Tigers escaped that Rangers series with a 2-1 win. And then the Boston series came up, and a lot of things went bad for the Tigers. They lose Monday, May 4th, 5-4. And then they lose Tuesday with, I believe, Monday's game was the one that had Skubal on the mound, so couldn't quite squeeze that one out. Tuesday, May 5th, Valdez picks up a loss here. 10-3, nothing really going for the Tigers on Tuesday. And Wednesday was even worse, losing that game 4-0. Flaherty on the mound there. Bats just kind of went dead over the early part of this week. Going to look to be bouncing back in the latter half of the week. They're taking on Kansas City. Montero versus Bubik was last night as you're listening to this. Saturday and Sunday, 7:10 p.m., 7:20 p.m., MLB TV and Peacock respectively. We don't know who's pitching for the Tigers. It's still undecided at this moment, but we can take a closer look at these matchups and see if there's anything that's going to help the Tigers out. They're giving the Royals a 56% chance to win that second game, and then also a 50.4% chance to win that third game. Looks to be a little bit of a home field advantage at Kauffman Stadium. I mean, the weather's supposed to be pretty solid, about 65 degrees, but for game three of the series, excuse me, and 81 degrees for game two of the series. Tigers swept them earlier this year, already back in early April. 2-1 on the 14th, 2-1 on the 15th, and 10-9 on the 16th. Royals going to be looking to get some get back and try and even the series up in this division, which they play each other like 12 times this year. So a long time before we'll find out who will win the series, but that's going to be one that the Tigers are going to want to win to have those tiebreaker advantages later in the season when you begin to crunch those records up against each other. Then the early week series next week is with the New York Mets on the road at Citi Field. You got Flaherty on the mound against Peralta on Tuesday, May 10th at 7:10 p.m. Valdez going to battle against Scott at 7:10 p.m. on Wednesday. And then the 1:10 p.m. pitch, Montero versus McLean on Thursday, May 14th, before they roll into next weekend's series with really no break because they're playing Friday, Saturday, Sunday against Toronto at Comerica Park, 6:40 p.m., undecided against Yesavage. And then Saturday at 1:10 p.m., ESPN Unlimited and MLB TV, undecided versus Lauer. And then that Sunday matchup, 1:40 p.m., you got Flaherty versus Gausman. Those are all going to be huge matchups over the next 10 days or so for the Tigers to kind of get back in that groove. They were kind of sitting in a position where they won a couple, lost a handful, won a couple, lost a handful, won a good bunch, then started to win and lose in almost an alternating fashion. And now they're starting to be back on a little bit of a landslide. So when does that winning streak restart? That's what they're looking for now, for a fresh boost and a restart. But I do remember vaguely seeing something about Tarek Skubal having to get surgery to remove some tissue or something out of his elbow. I'm going to find more on that here in just a second. But I do know that the Tigers have placed Torres on the 10-day IL. Here we go. Skubal undergoes surgery on his left elbow. Tigers ace and two-time defending American League Cy Young Award winner Tarek Skubal will have arthroscopic surgery for loose bodies in his left elbow. Hence said the left-handed felt pain in his elbow Sunday and underwent tests which revealed the injury. He underwent the procedure Wednesday, and they did not give a timetable for his return, but said it would be an easy process and procedure. Typically sidelines players for 2 to 3 months. So that's also going to be an issue moving forward as Skubal is not available for at least a month, maybe two, depending on, or even three, depending on what his recovery is like there. The Tigers also had to place second baseman Gleyber Torres on the 10-day injured list Wednesday because of a left oblique strain. They made the move retroactive to Monday. Torres got hurt Saturday during a 5-1 win against the Rangers. He was thrown out at home plate trying to score from second base on Riley Green's single and left after three innings. The three-time All-Star missed 10 games early last season because of the left oblique strain. He's hitting a 2.59 this season with two homers, 11 RBIs, and a team-high 25 walks. Infielder Jace Young was recalled from AAA Toledo and started Wednesday against Boston as the DH. He hit just 2.50 earlier in the major league games that he's played this season. So a couple of injuries really starting to plague the Tigers. The biggest one obviously being Tarek Skubal, who will be out for at least 2 to 3 months. And then shortly after that, Gleyber Torres goes down and makes that a serious issue for the Tigers. And obviously Valdez also got tossed the other night in a game. So Framber Valdez, after the left-hander hit Trevor Story with a pitch, followed back-to-back Boston Red Sox home runs. Wilson Contreras and Willier Abreu led off the fourth inning with long home runs to give Boston a 10-2 lead. Valdez hit Story with a 94-mile-per-hour fastball in the next pitch. Story stared at the mound while Tigers catcher Dylan Dingler and plate umpire Adam Beck got between Story and Valdez. The benches then cleared. No punches were thrown. Valdez was eventually ejected by third base umpire, ending a night that saw him allow 10 runs, 7 earned, in 3-plus innings of an eventual 10-3 Red Sox win. So frustration starting to boil over a little bit. I mean, at the end of the day, you got to put a cap on that. Like, dude, you let up a couple of runs. It happens. You have a bad day on the mound. It happens. But you don't go and whack a guy with a 94-mile-per-hour fastball. Luckily, it didn't exceed beyond that and become worse than that. But it definitely put a plague on what was already a pretty tough season. Looking at the power rankings from this most recent week, even at 18-20, the Tigers only dropped one spot from their previous ranking. They're sitting at 8. They entered the season with what looked like a strong veteran-laden starting rotation appropriate for a team with World Series aspirations. While those hopes linger, the start of the season has seen the rotation plan fall apart because of injuries to Tarek Skubal, Casey Mize, and Justin Verlander. Subpar performance from Jack Flaherty and Framber Valdez, and squirrely behavior from Valdez as well. Thus, in what has become an annual ritual, manager A.J. Finch will have to piece things together for the time being, hoping that Skubal's elbow procedure proves to be a simple cleanup. So we'll touch in next week with the Tigers and what's going to be happening there. But when we come back from the break, we're getting into more basketball action, talking WNBA and college changes here on Mid Madness on 95.3 The Ticket
Network. Well, Jason, I've got to tell you, you're pretty much everything this company is looking for in an entry-level candidate.
Great.
Your resume isn't quite what we're used to, but you've got a fantastic work ethic.
Thank you.
And I'm impressed by how you carry yourself.
So, should we talk about the job?
What? The job? Oh, sorry. Yeah, I have no way of recruiting or even meeting you. This interview didn't happen.
It may sound ridiculous, and that's because it kind of is. There's a huge pool of talent your company is missing out on. Meet the grads of life. Who are they? Talent worth knowing about. Young adults of unique determination and experience. An ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or even mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
Man, we really could have used him.
Don't miss out on a resource many innovative companies have already discovered. Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent. Brought to you by the Ad Council and gradsoflife.org.
Mike Rowe on the skills gap and how a student organization known as Skills USA is trying to fill it.
So the thing about Skills USA that's so cool, and the reason that my foundation has supported it for years, is that it's deliberately and intentionally focused on celebrating a skill. 3 million jobs right now exist in the trades and transportation and commerce. The skills gap is real. Training kids and getting them excited to do the jobs that exist ought to be job one. Skills USA does that in a big way. It's about excellence and competition and being good at what you do, and eventually through all of that, learning who you are. Skills USA is working. Skills USA,
champions at work. Learn more at microworks.com and skillsusa.org.
Welcome back to the Mid Madness. I'm your host, Dejon Hughes, here on 95.3 The Ticket. We're going to dive into some basketball action here. Some changes are being made, mostly for the good. The WNBA expansions era is officially underway. The league and the NBA Board of Governors formally approved new franchises in Cleveland, Philadelphia, and Detroit on Thursday, confirming start dates and ownership structures for three cities that will bring the league to 18 teams by 2030. Cleveland will be the first through the door beginning in 2028. Philadelphia will round out the trio in 2030, and Detroit smack dab in the middle in 2029. The announcements have been anticipated since the WNBA first granted the expansion franchises last June, but Thursday's vote made everything official and came on the heels of a new collective bargaining agreement ratified last month after a drawn-out labor dispute that had complicated the league's planning timeline. It comes as one WNBA icon will make a massive return to the league in a new role as well. WNBA Commissioner Kathy Engelbert set the tone with the initial expansion was announced. This historic expansion is a powerful reflection of our league's extraordinary momentum, the depth of talent across the game, and the surging demand for investment in women's professional basketball, she said at the time. With Portland and Toronto also joining the league this season, the WNBA is in the middle of the most aggressive growth period in its history. Cleveland's approval carries particular sentimental weight. The city last had an active WNBA franchise in 2003 when the Cleveland Rockers, one of the league's eight original charter organizations founded in 97, folded after seven seasons. The new franchise will play at Rocket Arena, home of the Cavaliers, for at least its first five seasons, with ownership committing to at least $7 million in arena renovations and $3.3 million in upgrades to the practice facility in Independence, Ohio. The team's nickname has yet to be publicly announced, with the reveal planned for this summer. Cleveland Cavaliers Vice President of Basketball and Business Operations, Grant Gilbert, who will oversee the naming process, acknowledged the weight of the Rockers' legacy while keeping options open. Obviously, there is existing equity within the Rockers' name itself, but we're keeping all options open and going through an inclusive process with people within the Rock Entertainment Group portfolio, outside agencies, and fan insights. So we're keeping it open and going through a process that we know the outcome is going to be very indicative of the pride of the Northeast Ohio community. The ownership structures for the three teams reflect the scale of investment now flowing into women's basketball. Cleveland's franchise has raised outside capital at a post-money valuation of $290 million, while Detroit has attracted 24 potential investors and is valued at $325 million, both figures above the $250 million purchase price. The Detroit team will play at Little Caesars Arena, with owner Tom Gores committing at least $35 million toward a new practice facility. Philadelphia, owned by the 76ers holding company with Josh Harris as the largest shareholder, will play at the Xfinity Mobile Arena, while a new shared arena for the Sixers and Flyers is constructed, with at least $50 million earmarked for a dedicated practice facility. So the WNBA is growing at a large amount. And it's not just growing, but it's growing back to its grassroots, going back to a lot of markets that they already had teams in, Detroit being one of those. We remember the time that the Shock were here and how dominant they were and how they won three championships in like 8 years. They made it to multiple WNBA finals, multiple Eastern Conference finals. They were fantastic. And I'm hoping that they bring that moniker back, as they do have the rights to it. But we'll find out later on what the announcement is going to be when they actually unveil the team, probably closer to 2029, which feels so far away, but as we know, is going to be here in the blink of an eye. So I'm looking forward to that WNBA expansion and what's going to be coming for those teams. But that's not the only place that we're seeing some expansion. Now, is it? The NCAA men's and women's NCAA brackets for basketball have been expanded to 76 teams. Announced on Thursday by the NCAA, it is the first time the men's tournament has expanded since 2011, the first time the women's tournament has expanded since 2022. Expanding the Division I men's and women's basketball championships is the right decision for the student athletes and programs that will now have access to the greatest events in college sports, said Tim Sands, chair of the Division I Board of Directors and the president at Virginia Tech. As NCAA leaders, we are especially excited to provide additionally highly competitive games for fans who look forward to March Madness every year. The expansion from 68 teams to 76 teams marks the men's tournament's largest increase since it moved to 64 teams in 1985. It went from 64 to 65 in 2001, and then it had three more teams in 2011 to form the first four. With the increase to 76, the first four doubleheaders on back-to-back days in Dayton will be replaced by a 12-game opening round. The Tuesday and Wednesday of the men's tournament will feature 12 games played by 24 teams in two different cities. There will now be three games each day in Dayton and three games each day in a second city yet to be determined, with sources telling ESPN's Pete Thamel that the second site is expected to be west of the Eastern time zone to help with logistics. On the women's side, the 12 opening round games will be played on the Wednesday and Thursday between Selection Sunday and the beginning of the round of 64 on Friday, and across 12 of the campus sites designated as first and second round host. Half of the 24 opening round teams will be the lowest seeded automatic qualifiers. The others will be the lowest seeded at-large teams. The traditional 64-team first round and ensuing rounds will remain the same in both the men and women's tournaments. March Madness is the best postseason in all of sports, and this new format will continue that legacy by producing even more compelling games for fans and student athletes, said Division I Men's Basketball Committee Chair Keith Gill. commissioner of the Sun Belt Conference. Movement toward expanding the NCAA tournament has been ongoing for more than 3 years. As the college football playoff expanded in college athletics, contended with conference realignment and the growth of the four biggest conferences in January 2023, they approved the Transformations Committee's recommendation to expand all sports championship events to include 25% of the teams. The Men's Basketball Committee began discussing expanding the field that summer, and that is how we have landed where we are. But not only has the NCAA tournament expanded, but the Players Era Men's Championship Hoops event expands to 24 teams. It will be split into two separate bracket play tournaments over the course of 2 weeks in Las Vegas. College basketball is the hottest and one of the fastest growing sports properties in the country. Players Era CEO Seth Berger said in a statement, "The players have never been better, and record ratings for early season college basketball reflect that. Led by top programs from multiple conferences across the sport, the teams in our field are stronger than ever. We can't wait to bring March to November with the number one college basketball network in the world. The week of November 16th will feature the Players Era 8 with potential preseason number one Florida highlighting the field. Also Houston, Kansas, Auburn, West Virginia, Notre Dame, Rutgers, and UNLV. Thanksgiving week will feature the Players Era 16. Reigning champion Michigan is the headliner. They're joined by Alabama, Gonzaga, St. John's, Louisville, Tennessee, Iowa State, Miami, Texas Tech, Baylor, Maryland, TCU, Oregon, Creighton, San Diego State, and Kansas State. Moving to bracket play format is a notable change from last year's 18-team format, which gave each team two scheduled games and then determined each team's third game based on record and scoring margin. ESPN Networks will be the exclusive home of all 37 games of the Players Era tournament in this upcoming season. The Players Era features elite programs, meaningful competition, and high-stakes matchups to start each season. Dan Margulis, ESPN Senior Director of College Basketball Programming and Acquisition, said in a statement, "These tournaments immediately strengthen ESPN's additional leading college basketball portfolio, industry-leading college basketball portfolio, and underscores our commitment to showcasing that the best teams and storylines across the sport. We're excited to partner with the Players Era Tournament to continue to elevate the Players Era Men's Championship and showcase them to fans across the country." Of the 24 teams across the two tournaments, 13 made the 2026 NCAA Tournament and 10 are ranked in their most recent way too early list. Schedules and venues will be announced later this offseason. The prizes will still stay massive. So, I mean, I love all the changes. I like more teams getting into tournaments. I like more chances, more games. It's exciting for fans. A lot of people are going to have some negative things to say, but me personally, I think these are all great things. And like I said 1,000 times over, please bring the Shock back. When we come back from the break, we'll be getting into our picks here on Min Mattis on 95.3. Welcome back into Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket. I'm your host, Dejon Hughes, and we're about to get into my favorite part of the show. It's our picks, the chance for us to talk about what's going to be happening this weekend and if we know ball or not. You can always play along with our picks using the chat feature in the 95.3 The Ticket app. Just listen to the picks that we take. We always do six games, matchups, however you want to look at it, contest. And then I do my own deliberation, research, and babble about how much I know and where I'm getting all this information from. And then I make my predictions because, you know, I know ball and I'm always going to get it right. Am I right or am I right? You know what I'm saying? And then you have the opportunity to do something yourself. Do your own research, your own deliberation, compile it all together, and then make your picks, submit them using that chat feature in the 95.3 The Ticket app, and see if you know ball better than I do. The thing is, if you're able to beat me in a season, we'll be able to get you something special because why not? We like to hook up our listeners who are engaging with us. So take advantage of this opportunity to engage with us. Maybe you do know ball better than I do. You can win yourself something nice because after a week like last week, I would argue a lot of y'all know ball better than me. I went a whopping 2-4 last week on a little bit of a slide after a 1-5 week the week before. So I'm down to what is 39-32-1. So I'm still sitting okay and above 500, but really on a landslide right now. So I'm really hoping that this upcoming week I can start to put some things together and you know, get back in the win column because, man, I am really, really struggling right now. But we are going to start over in the UFL with a matchup between the Renegades from Dallas and the Birmingham Stallions. The Stallions, they're on a one-game win streak, but they did win not too long before that. They won their first game since the first week of the season last week, which is huge for them. But now they're playing a Dallas Renegades team that's on a three-game losing streak. 140 points for Dallas, 154 given up, negative 14 on that score differential. Meanwhile, negative 34 for the Birmingham Stallions, 113, 147. Those numbers are kind of scary to me, but at the same time, I think I'm going to do something crazy and lean toward the Stallions here. I mean, they were able to pick up a win last week. Dallas has really been sliding of recent. I mean, three games in a row. Like, I'm following trends here. Y'all know how much of a trend follower I am when it comes to picking sports. Sometimes it gets me in trouble. Sometimes it comes in clutch. And I think that's what we're going to see here is somehow the Stallions are going to be able to work themselves into the middle of this field and be 3-4 after this week. And the Dallas Renegades will also be 3-4, but on the downslide, losing four in a row while the Birmingham Stallions are starting a little bit of a win streak, winning two in a row on my account. So I'm going to take the Stallions to be the best of the Dallas Renegades, and that is going to move us on into the Octagon as later tonight on the 9th, 5 p.m., 7 p.m., 9 p.m., early prelims, and main card on Paramount Plus. Kazmat Shamayev and Sean Strickland. Shamayev's 15-0, Strickland's 30-7. Shamayev, out of the United Arab Emirates, 6'2", 183 pounds, 32 years old, 75 inches on the reach, orthodox fighter, 4.04 on the significant strikes, lands him 80.70% of the time. Strickland, on the other hand, is 6'1", 185 pounds, 35 years old, 76 inches on the reach, an orthodox fighter as well, 6.04 on the significant strikes at a 44.2%. 20% on the accuracy on those. This is going to be a fantastic fight. I mean, even looking at the takedowns, 5.29 average for Shamayev, 55.32% on that accuracy, and a 1.83 on the sub. Submission attempts advantages or averages, and then you have Strickland, a 0.71 on the takedown, his 64.29% on the accuracy, though. And he's a 0.16 on the submission average. All the numbers are leaning toward this being a pretty even fight. It's going to be a fun fight, a great fight in the middleweight division. But there's something about Shamayev at this moment that makes him an absolute monster. He's great on the ground. He's great standing up. He's a smart fighter. He thinks ahead. He's quick. He's got all the metrics to continue to be a champion. And with that belt around his arm, looking at the picture, I'm not sure I can pick against him. I'm going to roll with Shamayev to retain his belt in what is going to be a blockbuster card that is filled with fantastic fights. So if you have some time, you might want to sit and watch some UFC this weekend. It's going to be great. So now we're getting over into all the action that everybody probably has been watching of recent NBA action. We're going to start over in the Western semis, a game three coming up later today, 8:30 p.m. on ABC. It's the Thunder versus the Lakers. Thunder up 2-0 after winning 108-90, 125, 107, respectively, in games one and two. Luka Doncic has been out so far. He is a game-time decision with a hamstring injury. Jared Vanderbilt is a game-time decision with a finger injury. Jalen Williams, a game-time decision with a hamstring injury for the Thunder. They're giving the Thunder a 67% chance to win, 33% for the Lakers. And as much as I love LeBron, as much as I would like the Lakers to boot out the Thunder are 8.5-point favorites. And they're sitting at negative 37 on the money line, 375 on the money line, and there's a reason for that. I'm going to roll with the Thunder to take a commanding 3-0 lead in the West semi series and look to either sweep or gentleman sweeps the Lakers and get them on out of here so they can move on and try and get back to the NBA Finals. We're going to pop over to a game four that's happening on Sunday, May 10th, 3:30 p.m. on ABC. So that's coming up tomorrow. giving the Knicks a 64.8% chance to win Game 3, a 35.2% chance for the 76ers. I think the 76ers will win Game 3. I think that they're going to come in at home, feel that energy, be excited, be ready to play, and want to avenge that loss that they had, those two losses they had on the road, and try and give themselves a chance in this series. And I think the crowd will be behind them as well. But the problem is going to be, can you win two games back-to-back like that? I'm not sure. The Knicks have been phenomenal this year. You may be able to catch them on one, but I think even after a loss, they're going to bounce back and be like, look, if we can go home up 3-1 in any kind of fashion, we want that, and then we can close this thing out at home and wait to see who we're going to play in the finals. Hopefully, it's going to be those Pistons. I may be saying that selfishly, but maybe they feel the exact same way. I doubt it, though. They probably want to play the Cavs because the Pistons gave them the work during the regular season. So I said all of that to say that I'm taking the Knicks in Game 4 because I think that the 76ers will win Game 3 trying to extend the series. Now we're going to pop over and stay on Sunday, 7:30 p.m., NBC and Peacock, out of the Target Center in Minneapolis. Game 3 of arguably the best series in the semis. The San Antonio Spurs on the road against the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Timberwolves went down to San Antonio and won Game 1, 104-102, as Dylan Harper missed the open three at the buzzer to win that game. And then the Spurs came out and dominated in Game 2, 133-95. It wasn't even close. No kind of questions about it. The Spurs are given a 62.8% chance to win, a 37.2% chance for the Timberwolves. Anthony Edwards is a game-time decision with his knee injury. So is Ayo Dosunmu with a heel injury. Dante DiVincenzo is out for the season with that torn Achilles. As much as I want to see Anthony Edwards and company go to battle, ball out, be great, make this a series that we all want to see, I'm not sure that we're going to get another game like we got like Game 1 out of the Spurs. The Spurs really struggled in Game 1, and it proved to be an issue for them. And it proved to be something that, Minnesota was able to take advantage of. I mean, they got great numbers out of Anthony Edwards in that game. Julius Randle was great. He had 21 and 10, 8 of 20 from the field, 3 of 6 from the free throw line. Mike Conley, 6 assists, 0 turnovers. Now, that's how you run point guard. Your team shoots 46, 38, 57 in the splits. Led for 35% of the game, grabbed 46 rebounds, only turned it over 13 times. I mean, you won all the important battles in that game one. Got 18 points from Anthony Edwards in his return in that minutes restriction as well. So, like, it's not that it's not doable. You know, when you can get Dylan Harper to be the leading scorer for the Spurs and it's at, 18, he's a rookie, that's a good thing. You're able to keep Victor Wembanyama under that marker, De'Aaron Fox under that marker, Stephon Castle under that marker. That is huge. But you got to be able to also repeatedly do that. And I'm not sure any team in the NBA can keep Wemby off the boards, off the score charts, off the blocks like they did in this game consistently. And that's what it's going to take to beat the Spurs. And I'm not sure that the Timberwolves have that long term. I did all of that to say the Spurs are going to win game four of that series. That's coming up on Sunday. And then the one we all been waiting to talk about, game three, later today, 3 p.m. NBC and Peacock. It's our Pistons on the road at Rocket Arena in Cleveland, Ohio, against the Cavaliers. Cavs are 4.5-point favorites, -175 on the money line, +145 for the Pistons on the books. But the matchup predictor, giving the Pistons a 56.1% chance, a 43.9% chance for Cleveland. We know the Pistons are up 2-0 after two 10-point victories. We've talked about the injuries coming into this game. We talked about the fact that the Cavs have lost three out of their last five. They won the most important one in that game, 7, against the Toronto Raptors. We talked about the Pistons being on that five-game win streak and how the energy is on their side. Cade Cunningham being at playing at an unbelievable rate and continuing to be an all-star. Tobias Harris on a seven-game 20-plus point streak in the playoffs. not only is that the longest of his career, but I believe it tied the longest in Pistons history, if not surpassed it. So he's also setting some history. Cade Cunningham just matched Isaiah Thomas for the most games in a playoff a single postseason for 25 points, 10 assists with his third. So I'm sure we'll see him do that a fourth time and take over there. So I got the Pistons winning game three. So that gives me the Stallions, Pistons, Thunder, Knicks, Spurs, and Shamayev. Hopefully you enjoy a fantastic weekend of jam-packed sports, tons of sports everywhere you turn your head, and that we will check back in with you next week with our Pistons, Tigers, and whatever else there is to talk about in Michigan for sports mid-madness here on 95.3 The Ticket.
Join Dejon Hughes every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. for Mitten Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Miss the show or want to run it back? Stream Mitten Madness on demand on the WBCK app, sponsored by AirwayCashForJunkCars.com.